You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Today, we are celebrating a big milestone for Cherry Bomb, the 200th episode of our podcast. First, let's thank our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. To learn more and to find their eggs, visit hansenbrookfarm.com. I can't believe we've hit the 200th mark. When the podcast launched almost 5 years ago, podcasts were still a relatively new thing, but we loved the idea of bringing Cherry Bomb magazine to life through audio. Why did we name it Radio Cherry Bomb? Fun fact. I was a big REM fan and always loved their song, Radio Free Europe. Since the debut of Radio Cherry Bomb, we've interviewed literally hundreds of women, each of them with a unique and special story to tell. I've met so many great people through the show, and we've run the full gamut of emotions on air. We've cried with Kim Malik, the founder of Salt and Straw, and Michelle Mannix of Cookspace. We've laughed with Lisa Q. Fetterman and Amy Guittard and Melissa Hemsley. And we've dreamt of running away to Venice with Skye McAlpine and Cha McCoy. Only one guest made me nervous, and that was Nigella Lawson. Nigella is brilliant, so you really need to be on your toes when you're talking to her. To celebrate our bicentennial episode, we thought we'd revisit some of our favorite interviews, hear a few shout-outs, and even do a special edition of our speed round. Before we get on with our celebration, let's hear a word from our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Suzanne Vizethan is a mother hen. She's the chef and owner of Buttermilk Kitchen in Atlanta. Curious how Chef Suzanne makes her French toast with caramelized bananas? The ingredients include whole milk, ciabatta bread, and some Hansenbrook Farm eggs to make each slice as fluffy as can be. Or, if you're like me and have a serious love affair with pimento cheese, you can make her pimento cheese omelets. Suzanne whips up 3 Hansenbrook Farm eggs, lets the omelet set, then adds red pepper jelly, thick-cut bacon, and my beloved pimento cheese to put a delicious southern spin on a breakfast favorite. You can find Chef Suzanne's delicious egg-centric recipes and videos on hansenbrookfarm.com. If you're looking for Hansenbrook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs, you can find them at Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country.
Hi, this is Gabby and Diana from Smith Canteen, and we wanted to say
happy 200th episode.
Hi, I'm Lauren Goldstein, and I'm so excited that there have been 200 episodes of Radio Cherry Bomb so far.
The first episode of Radio Cherry Bomb aired on May 7th, 2014. Our original host was Julia Tertian, who many of you know and love. Julia went on to host her own podcast and write such beloved cookbooks as Now and Again and Small Victories.
Hi, and welcome to the first ever Radio Cherry Bomb show. We're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Julia Tertian.
One of my favorite interviews of Julia's was when she talked to the barefoot contessa, Ina Garten. Here, Ina considers the lobster.
I'll tell you another memorable meal that I had, which was memorable for the wrong reason.
Those are always good. Better in memory.
The founder of Williams-Sonoma was coming for dinner, and I just, in the same way I wanted to do something surprising, I was sure everybody serves this incredibly elegant meal to Chuck, and I wanted to do just the opposite. So what I decided I would do is my kitchen clam bake, which is in my first book, mm-hmm. where you take a huge pot and you layer potatoes and sausages and shrimp and clams and mussels, and then you put corn and lobster on the top, and you pour a whole bottle of white wine in, and you steam it for 30 minutes, and it's just, it's like one of those like crazy good meals. And you put a big bowl, you dump it into a huge bowl in the middle of the table, and I gave everybody, you know, white chef's aprons at their seats. And they just, it's just hands-on. You just dive into this bowl. Well, in order to fill the bowl, I decided I would take the lobsters out and keep them warm in the oven and then serve them a little later. And we just had a wonderful time. We had a great dinner. And the next morning, Jeffrey woke up and said, oh, that was so good. That was just delicious. But I don't remember having a lobster. Oh, my God, they're still in the oven.
It's the most slow-roasted lobster.
I mean, we've all served a meal where you forgot to serve the bread, but I can't remember ever forgetting to serve the main course.
Wow.
So the next time, I saw Chuck Williams the next day, and I said to him, next time I think I'll serve the lobster.
That's unbelievable.
But we still had a really good time, and that's the memorable part.
I'll say, yeah, that sounds very memorable.
Hi, I'm Caroline Schiff, known as Pastry Schiff, and I wanted to wish Cherry Bomb a happy 200th episode, and you're the bomb.
In addition to our regular radio show, we've done a few special episodes and miniseries. We did the Super Women Superfood miniseries in 2018 about wellness with our friends Athena Calderon, Hannah Bronfman, and others. For our most recent miniseries, The Future of Food, we traveled to 12 different cities to hear from a wide range of Bomb Squad members, chefs, farmers, restaurateurs, bakers, a poet, and more. One of my favorite moments from the tour was when Sarah Kiefer of the Vanilla Bean blog talked about her chocolate chip cookie recipe going viral. Her cookies didn't crumble, but other things did.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm just going to admit that I'm terribly nervous right now. I tend to write in stories, and so when I started to write what I was going to write tonight, it just kind of came out in story form. So I'm going to do what you're not supposed to do, which is read your notes, but I need to tonight. So that's what I'm going to do. Last September, I was pleasantly surprised to find a recipe from my cookbook make its way into the New York Times. The highlighted recipe was for a chocolate chip cookie that uses a technique now known as pan banging. You may have heard of this, where the baking sheet is tapped or banged in the oven while the cookies are baking, creating ridges and crinkles around the edges of the cookies. Although this has evolved and some people are actually taking them out of the oven and dropping them on the floor to get these ridges. Being in the New York Times food section was a bucket list item I never thought would happen, and I was ecstatic. A few days later, Fox News picked up the story, highlighting my cookie on all its local news outlets and online nationally. My pan-banging cookie had officially gone viral, and I like to point out that if both the New York Times and Fox are reporting on the same story, that it can't be fake news. That's my cheesy dad joke. I started getting emails and messages from people all over. My Instagram was full of people pan-banging their cookies and tagging me in photos. Local TV stations came to my house and filmed me making cookies. Newspapers called asking me questions, and I was flown out to New York to make cookies at an event. It was a whirlwind of a month, and I found myself, as one does on social media, addicted to the mentions, hearts, hashtags, and positive feedback. The question of how do I get my recipe to go viral started being posed to me, and I didn't have a good answer for anyone. There wasn't any formula or secret that I somehow cracked, and I like to think and hoped that it was because I had worked hard on making a cookie worth baking. But there was one element that kept it trending, and that was for as many people who loved this cookie and raved about it, there were also plenty of people who absolutely hated this cookie and thought it was ridiculous that it had been invented. The comment section to the New York Times under this recipe is filled with comments of people angry that these cookies exist. They are too greasy, too buttery, too big, too sweet, and people are furious about the pan banging. It's too time consuming, it's not worth it, and my favorite complaint was that it was too loud. I had someone rant to me in an email about that. So while I had some good press and saw my Instagram follower count increase rapidly over the month my cookies went viral, I also had to process and accept that there were piles of people out there who hated what I was doing and maybe hated me for doing it. As someone who avoids conflict, has wrestled with being a people pleaser all my life, and has been diagnosed with anxiety and OCD, this set off a string of emotions. I could accept that my recipe wasn't for everyone, and I wasn't offended that someone wanted something different in a cookie. I always say, just as Carrie said, that there's always room in the world for more chocolate chip cookie recipes. But it was hard to accept that people would write off my whole career and hard work over a cookie, or that they assumed something of me because they didn't even like the picture of my cookie. I also had to deal with the press presenting me wrong. While I was flattered and so thankful to be included in the New York Times, my book wasn't mentioned and I didn't see any sales due to the article, both for not being mentioned and the recipe being available for free. They also highlighted my Instagram career over my book career. The local news had a headline that read, "Local Mom Gets in the New York Times." Also skipping over my career and presenting the idea that, you know, if this mom can get into the New York Times, anybody can do it. I was conflicted and frustrated that I couldn't control the narrative of my own recipe and story. I wanted to bake the cookies for everyone and try to prove they were good enough that I could bake and wasn't just some hack influencer who lucked out and that I knew what I was doing. I found myself obsessed about a cookie. I stopped reading comments on the news articles and on my blog. And I stopped answering questions about them in my messages and emails. I started actually regretting the cookies and their technique as I anxiously analyzed how many people viewed me through these cookies. Bloggers started posting their own versions of them, changing just a few ingredient measurements or sprinkling them with salt and calling them their own. Others tried to make the same cookie without all the fuss of pan banging. These new recipes were born from my original, but they weren't mine anymore, and I had no control over where things went. I started believing all the misconceptions I was worried about. I wasn't really a baker. Those cookies are clickbait. And I'm just a local mom who lucked out. It was actually in the act of parenting that I finally got over the weird spiral. My daughter was doing a report at school, and she needed to pretend to interview someone famous. As she was looking through a list of possible options, I slyly mentioned to her that, well, you know, your mom was in the New York Times. Maybe you could interview her. She didn't even look up from the paper she was reading and said, "Well, you weren't really in the New York Times, your cookies were. Maybe I could interview them." She's right over there too. I found myself laughing as I heard my ego crack in half. Oh my God, I am worrying about cookies. Yes, they are buttery and sugary and delicious as hell, but they can't bring clean water to Flint or stop the next school shooting. They won't give women equal pay or take the stigmatism away from mental health issues or remove the injustice of racism. They won't bring peace and only temporarily bring happiness. They can't even do the simple task of keeping people civil in the comment section of a newspaper article. I thanked my daughter for her honesty. I apparently needed a good dose of it. After that, I found myself pleasantly at peace with my cookies. They aren't really mine anymore. They belong to the pan bangers of the world, and I am thankful for each and every one of them. I still make them often. They are our house cookie, and each time I pick up the edge of my baking sheet and drop it 4 inches in my oven, I watch a ripple form around the edge of my cookies and know that those crispy edges and gooey, chocolatey centers will give me a moment of joy, but they do not define me, for it is only a cookie.
Cherry Bomb, this is Rochelle Oliver with Island and Spice Magazine. Just want to say, you light my fire every episode, so happy 200th.
Radio Cherry Bomb is only possible because of its incredible community, and that includes the guest hosts who've kindly stepped in for me over the past few years. I want to say thank you to Jane Larkworthy, Clancy Miller, Jesse Sheehan, Gilly Houston, and Donna Yen. Let's give a listen.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I am Jane Larkworthy.
I'm Clancy Miller.
Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Gilly Houston.
And I'm Donna Yen.
Hello, Bomb Squad. This is Jesse Sheehan.
Another reason we love making Radio Cherry Bomb is that it allows us to share highlights from Cherry Bomb events with listeners all over the world. One of those events is our annual Jubilee Conference. We've held Jubilees in New York City and San Francisco, and this April, we are bringing it to Brooklyn. Last year, Sharon Richardson of Just Soul Catering gave one of the solo talks, and I think it was one of the most powerful moments in Cherry Bomb history. As Sharon is about to tell you, journeys must be told. Here is Sharon Richardson from Jubilee 2018 sharing her journey. This is the first time we've aired this clip.
Hi, guys. So my name is Sharon Richardson, and I am honored to be here this morning with you lovely, beautiful women. I have already met some wonderful people here, and I'm just really glad that Claudia and Kerry invited me to be a part of this. So thank you. So when Kerry asked me, so what are you going to talk about, you know, I said, give me a few days, you know, let me think this over. And so something came up in my spirit, and so my piece is called Redemption. The foundation. What do you know about being saved from error, or your own choices, or being saved from what older people call sin when you're just 5 years old? Daddy came to get me to show me what no little girl should have to witness. My mom passed out on the floor from the night before. She had come home from work drunk again. Daddy said, I need it for you to see this because you never believe me. I was an only child going through this all alone, seeing my mom, the mother that I loved, who fed me, who nourished me, and told me that she loved me unconditional. And seeing her in this condition, I was very sad. My thoughts to myself, seeing my mom like this, is she dead? Becoming a caretaker became my life moving forward, caring for those who I felt needed me. This was my job growing up. As a wounded healer and a caretaker to my friends, partners, lovers, and friends and members of my church and Girl Scouts, everything, I became the caretaker of these people. So at the age of 16, who would know or who would believe that I would collapse into the abyss of no return needing saving grace one day? Age 30, the worst happened. 27 years ago, on May 5th, 1990, my abusive boyfriend was murdered after walking into my apartment carrying my 2-year-old son. My daughter, who was 8 years old at that time, did not know or have a clue that she would become the next caretaker in the family. For my job, as I knew it, as caretaker, had ended that evening. The courtroom. Guilty. Sentenced to 20 years. The feeling of darkness came over me, hearing the jurors, hearing my family and my mom yelling as she hit the floor. Then the metal gates closed, shutting behind me. With a baby in my womb, the memory of blood in my mouth, the scars on my face, the black eyes. It was then that my path towards redemption had begun. Hours turned into days, days turned into nights, still moments returned in my thoughts. The years started to move forward after May 1990. The prison doors opened and then they closed. I could only imagine what was next. There was no looking back. The very keys that I turned as a correction officer was now being turned on me. I was the one behind the prison doors now. I laid in a cold cell on a metal slab with a mattress not made for humans. Deep in my thoughts, I had to find solitude, understanding, and freedom. I had to find peace. I had to find remorse inside of me, a non-forgiving place at that time. I told myself this, and I believed it. After all, someone died. It was my fault, right? Twisted in my thoughts, my heart bleeds as the tears continue to fall. I reminded myself in an instance, he did molest my daughter. He did beat my son. He told me that he loved me, yet he bruised and busted my skin. I needed saving. I needed understanding. I needed resolution. I needed to find me, and fast. Time not waiting, moving slowly, for the lessons in my life didn't come and don't come when you want them to. Yet over and over again in my mind, I knew that I had to find peace. Bedford Hills Correctional Facility, NYC ID 91G 1854, in my cell, in shock. There had to be a way back. Was there love in this dark place called prison, I asked myself? My upbringing, as I remembered, had seeds that were planted in my soul. My West Indian spiritual family, despite the many family flaws, needed watering, I thought. Time passed, and I felt the seeds growing during the 20 years of my incarceration. I began to meet people with stories and melodies, many with tapestries painted with all sorts of colored paths, roads, hills, and valleys. I found my spiritual healing in a higher education at many levels that awakened my cognitive thinking, allowing me to embrace a different phenomenal walk towards my freedom. What was dark started to have some light. I arrived. My journey took me to my mother's bedside visit 18 years later, and this time my memory served its purpose, for I would see my mother again laying down on a different bed, a bed that I thought that I would never see. Mom was on her deathbed. She could not speak, only hear me. She had suffered a stroke. She was helpless. All of Mommy's choices and decisions had caught up with her now, and I was thinking, I'm losing my friend. I'm losing my buddy. I was so sad, but I had come to say goodbye. You can go now, I said. I will be okay, Mommy. I promise you this. The ride back to the prison in handcuffs and shackles were gurgling as my childhood bellied up. The correction officers asked me, are you okay, Sharon? I could remember weeping and weeping on that ride back. So why food, people asked me. Why food? I returned back to the prison where my friends cooked food, lots of it. They were allowed to stay up and wait for me to come back. I couldn't believe it. We ate and we cried. I told them about my trip. I told them about my mother's condition. We ate and we cried some more. That night I told my story that led to that day. We all shared some sort of story that night, and then we had dessert, and then we went to bed. My day of redemption. In that hour, I had begun to feel it all in one moment. I had arrived, and I didn't even know it. My day of redemption. In that hour, I was giving back all that was taken from me. And then I was released May 6, 2010. Who knew what the journey in front of me would hold? Today, I am the proud but humble CEO and founder of Just Soul Catering, a justice-involved catering business, a social enterprise, a catering business that hires formerly incarcerated women. We cook soul food, and we share stories to wonderful people of New York City, people who love to eat and never sleep. Soul food comes from a soulful place inside those that cook this food. It comes from a journey. Journeys must be told. It's where soul food is derived from, its richness and taste, its ability to reach people. This is a story of redemption, a story, a gift, a story, a gift to you, all who sit here. One of many stories told, one of many given, one of many to inspire all.
You won't be surprised to learn this, but Sharon got a standing ovation for her talk. Another favorite moment of mine was our 100th episode, which we recorded in early 2017 in Los Angeles at Headley & Bennett headquarters. I interviewed author Ruth Reichel and chef Nancy Silverton, which was so much fun. The two women had been friends for decades and had a lot of history to share. Ellen Bennett, the founder of Headley & Bennett and one of my favorite people in the food world, kicked things off with a talk called The Art of the Hustle. Ellen entered the room via a zip line, true story, and offered this advice for the Bomb Squad.
I always wanted to do that. Now, check it off the bucket list. Okay, hi guys. So, every week we have a staff meeting at our office, and we always end up, the entire meeting is finished with me giving the team a pep talk. So, I thought it fitting for tonight to give you guys a little pep talk about life. So, the words that I really, really live by and I wake up to every day is wake up and fight. And I feel like it basically means it's in you to get up, to do it, to get out there and make some stuff happen. And it consists of literally just deciding that you can do it. And every day I decide that today I'm going to do it and I'm going to make some stuff happen. So I always get up, and these days I've been going to boxing and yoga and spinning, and I don't have a lot of time because now I have all kinds of stuff and obligations I have to do, but I cram in the time and I make it happen, and I feel so much better. And we're just so lucky to be alive and to have like arms and legs and a nose and a head that work. And why miss a day of this awesome life? And you just have to really get out there and fight. So that's my first part of my pep talk. The second part that I love is, if the front door isn't open, climbing through the window. What does that mean? It means don't just stop because you ran into a wall or you don't see an entrance or you don't know how to get there or you don't know somebody that knows somebody. Everything that we've done with Headley & Bennett was very much, we were just like, we're going to find a way. And if there isn't a front door, you climb in through the window. And if there isn't a window, you make a window. And if there isn't a window or a wall, you go through the back garden. And you just find a way and you get scrappy. And you have to just be okay with being scrappy. And once you're okay with being scrappy, it's kind of like all rules go to hell and you can just do it. And so just do it, okay? My other one is, I really feel that like sheer determination will get you very, very far. There's been a lot of times, I mean, I was a line cook, I'm a CEO now. I can't even tell you the meltdowns behind the scenes that happen to make stuff happen. And it takes a lot of determination and just sheer willpower to push through all those times. And you kind of have to be your own cheerleader. You have to just say, hey, you can do it, get up. Okay, cry a little bit, maybe whine, maybe punch a wall or something, but then get back up and keep going because it's in you. And I've run marathons before, and the reason I wanted to do marathons was because I was like, okay, if you can run 26 miles and not die, you could pretty much do most things in life. And if you've ever run, when you get to about mile 20, you really feel like you're going to die, or maybe you already did and your legs are still moving, and then you still keep going another 6 miles and you're like, how am I physically still on this earth right now? And then you get to the end of it and you're like, oh, you proved yourself wrong and you kind of proved yourself right. You could do it and you always could. And then you were like, okay, I am stronger than I think I am. So you really are stronger than you think you are. You just have to push through the uncomfortable, painful, awful, nasty parts. So basically, stretch your mental muscles. Don't give up. Wake up and fight. Hustle your heart out, and you can make something awesome happen. And right now, we are in the time of the woman. I mean, it's like we're here. We're doing it. And it's so exciting, and so I feel like it's our freaking duty to get out there and prove to the world that we are awesome and we are here in numbers, and we bring so much heart and soul to everything that we do. So, like, Let's prove it to the world. Let's fucking kill it, ladies. Okay? So, thank you. Oh, and my last one. This is a good one. I can't forget this one. They aren't bumps in the road. They are the road. I mean, how true is that? There is no easy way. There is no little side access road to success. It really does look like a work suit. And then you just have to get out there and do it. I mean, it really, truly, truly, truly. So hustle, work your heart out. You're going to make it. It'll be awesome. And then we will all cheer you on too.
Such good stuff from Ellen. You've heard me do speed rounds with so many people over the years, but now the tables are turning and I'm going to be put on the spot with our associate producer, Jess Seidman. Jess did not let me see the questions in advance. Here we go.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Jess.
Are you excited?
I'm nervous.
No.
I'm nervous.
Don't be nervous. Okay. Question number one. Paper, plastic, or reusable cup?
Reusable cup. Always.
Always. Favorite food from your childhood?
Oh, gosh. Favorite food from my childhood. I had a lot of them. I loved my mom's tuna noodle casserole. I loved Kraft macaroni and cheese. I'll say those.
Those are delicious. Favorite magazine, and you can't say Cherry Bomb.
Favorite magazine. Oh, that's a tough one. I have so many. You know what? I love Gentlewoman. I think that's a fantastic magazine.
Okay. Recipe you know the best.
I make a really good pasta with broccoli rabe and sausage. And it's really simple and delicious and so easy to make.
Mm-hmm. Can you spatchcock a chicken?
I can spatchcock a chicken. I did that last night. Did I tell you I was going to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
But I thought it would be fun to share.
Yep.
Okay.
It's easier than you think.
Song that comes on at a party and you're like, yes, this song.
Oh gosh. Anything by New Order. Bizarre Love Triangle, maybe.
Amazing. Amazing. Favorite holiday for its food?
Favorite holiday for its food? I would have to say Christmas Eve because that's the big holiday with my family. My siblings and nieces and nephews and everybody gets together. And my mom always makes like a really fun appetizer spread. And we have, she makes the little hot dogs, like the mini wieners wrapped in, you know, Pillsbury crescent rolls.
Oh, yeah.
And can't get enough of those.
One food that you could eat for the rest of your life?
Ice cream.
Favorite movie?
Oh my God, my favorite movie. It used to be The Breakfast Club. But as Molly Ringwald pointed out, there are some things with that movie that
don't
maybe weren't great. But I have some others. I can't just pick one. Love Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. The Royal Tenenbaums. Love. And Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
That's the best movie. I think that's my favorite movie. Okay. Worst job you ever had?
This one. No. I'm kidding. I had two hideous jobs. I sold hot dogs from a hot dog truck on Staten Island when I was a teenager. That was just hell. And then I worked in the Staten Island Mall at a cart that sold like really shitty cat stuff. Like this cat clock and all this stuff. They were just, yeah.
Favorite coffee shop in Brooklyn?
Smith Canteen.
Right answer. Okay. This brings us to, if you had to cook dinner for any food celebrity, who would it be? And what would you make?
Oh my God, that's a really hard question. Oh God, I love so many people. Who would it be? If I had to pick one food celebrity, you know what? You didn't say if they're living or dead. This is kind of a morbid way to end the speed round. But, you know, we always do the who would you be trapped on a desert island with? And my answer was always Anthony Bourdain.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always be really surprised when other people's answer wasn't Anthony Bourdain.
It's true.
You know, I still think it's such a big loss to the food world and the world at large, his passing. And I would have loved to have made dinner for him and just gotten to know him a little better and understand, you know, what makes him tick and what, I don't know, just have a conversation with him. I always thought I would interview him and we came really close to having him on Radio Cherry Bomb once, and he didn't want to do the interview for various reasons related to Me Too, but I regret not having had the chance to interview him.
Totally.
So.
Okay. Last question. What is a question you wish more people asked you?
I never think about that.
I like interviewing people. I mean, I don't mind being interviewed, but I like interviewing other people. And I think that's been the common denominator through my life, back to when I was editor-in-chief of the high school newspaper to today. I just like telling other people's stories. So the thing that I'll think is, why didn't I ask that person that question instead of why didn't someone ask me that question? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. All right. Do you have any other speed round things?
Just apologies for always turning a speed round into a non-speed round.
I will admit something. On a future episode of Radio Cherry Bomb, I did the speed round, and I asked it someone, and I turned it into a very long format conversation.
We need to come up with a name for the Cherry Bomb speed round, not quite speed round.
It's like the walking round. Okay.
Thanks, Jess.
Thanks, Carrie. Fun. Yeah.
I'm Jessamine Waldman Rodriguez, and I am the founder at Hot Bread Kitchen and managing director at Daily Provisions.
I'm Jessica Edwards, and an avid listener, first-time caller, long-time listener.
200 episodes, woo, of Cherry Bomb brilliance. Congratulations,
Congratulations,
Carrie, and the whole team for all that you do.
Hi, my name's Christina Ha. I am the co-founder of Macaroon Parlor.
And I am Simon Tung, co-founder of Macaroon Parlor.
I'm also the co-founder of Meow Parlor.
And I'm a co-founder of Cat Camp.
We have 8,000 cats.
We have a lot of cats. We love food and we really love cats. And we both want to wish Carrie and the whole Cherry Bomb Posse a happy 200th episode.
Hip hip hooray!
Please know it has been an honor and a privilege to host this show. As Sharon Richardson said earlier, a story is a gift, and I feel I've been gifted 200 times over because of Radio Cherry Bomb. It's been a privilege to learn and grow and change with all of you. The show is nothing without our listeners, so thank you for tuning in each week. We can actually see a map of where our listeners are, and we love knowing that the show makes it around the world each week. Thank you to the wonderful sponsors for helping keep this show on the air, and thank you to Kerrygold for throwing our 200th episode party. You can see pictures from the party on our website. And thank you to the team at Heritage Radio, the home of Radio Cherry Bomb. We have some news. We will be launching a second podcast in a few months with a new host. We're doing another Radio Cherry Bomb tour across the country starting in late spring, and we'll be visiting San Diego, Nantucket, Baltimore, Phoenix, and several other cities. And starting with this episode, we'll have transcripts available on our website so the show will be accessible to even more people. Thank you to Handsome Brook Farm for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. For more, visit handsomebrookfarm.com. Radio Cherry Bomb's associate producer is the one and only Jess Seidman. Jess, I love working with you. I hope you know that. And our theme song is by the band Tra La La. Thanks for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.